Hey, everybody. Welcome to E3 2015, day two. I just had a brain fart there. It's about midnight. And,
it is almost
day three. We are back in the, workhouse where, everybody is working on their, writing and their videos. And I'm working on a podcast because I'm supposed to do a podcast every day. And I waited till the last possible minute, almost literally today. I just had other stuff going on all day. But I'm here with, Justin Berube, and, Justin, you are wearing Mario pajamas right now and a Mario hoodie, and you're one of the biggest Mario fans that I know. And so tell me about Super Mario Maker and your experiences with it so far at E3.
Mario Maker is just a lot of fun. It takes elements you're familiar with and kind of gives it a new twist by taking these different elements from different Mario games and putting them in Mario games that they weren't in before. So it's really creating something new out of old things, which is a lot of fun. So you know what to expect to a degree, but you haven't seen them interact with each other before, so there's a fresh element to it. And the levels that are being designed for it are things you haven't seen ever before in a Mario game. There's things that I think Nintendo would have been scared to put in just a regular Mario game because it's either too difficult or too crazy or too gimmicky for a standard level that you'll see in Mario Maker and have a ton of fun. I'm already seeing early stuff that's been developed by Nintendo, and I'm impressed.
Yeah, I agree. The demo here at E3 has over 40 pre-built levels that were made by various people at the Treehouse and whatnot, and presumably, some of that stuff might end up in the final version of the game. Some of the levels I've played clearly have had a lot of time and effort put into them and are really well thought out, and some go through some pretty intricate machinations of all the different elements, fitting together and kind of working in a perfect sequence. Now, I overheard one of the demo reps today say that in Super Mario Brothers, Nintendo themselves have kind of guidelines for what is allowed and what isn't, or what makes a good level and what doesn't. And the rep was kind of bragging about how now with Super Mario Maker, you don't have to follow those rules, and so you can do things that Nintendo really would never do. And that's kind of the appeal. Like, that's kind of a selling point of the game. Have you tried that yourself, or have you seen anything in the levels that really kind of like made you think, whoa, this seems off, or this just seems impossible for a Mario game. I can't believe I'm doing it.
Yeah, there was a few things I saw in the demo today that I never would have seen in a Mario game before. There was a level where... I'm sorry. There was a level where...
There's shenanigans going on in the background here.
We're having a good time. All right, there was like a P-switch, and you kind of had to have this P-switch make it through the level on its own. It was like kind of like a Rube Goldberg machine and like make sure it got to the end, but you couldn't really do anything. You just had to like survive in like a lower part of the level while you watch the P-block make it to the end. And then it would open up like the path to the final check, or the final flag pole of the level or whatever. And you would never have seen anything like that in a traditional Mario game. Another level I saw was where you weren't supposed to touch any button. That was the only way to beat the level. And then like a springboard would come out and knock you forward and set off a chain of events, just knocking Mario around to the end. And if you touched any button, you would die. So if you just started playing the level trying to make it through, you would never do it. You could try all you want, but the trick would be just drop the controller and you'll win. And there is another one that's similar to that where you just have to hold forward and run the entire time, but if you jump or anything, you're gonna die. So there's a lot. I mean, those are gimmicky levels, but you never would have seen anything like that in a traditional Mario game.
I tried today the Nintendo World Championship levels that the Treehouse guys made, Eric and Morgan. And, I had the advantage there of having seen the levels before and having seen people, frankly, better than I am at Super Mario Brothers play through them. And so I had kind of a guide. But, one thing I noticed is there's a, There's the third level, which was done in the style of Super Mario World. There's a section at the end that I saw a few people go through, in which, there's a pipe that spits out a mushroom right at the beginning of a little platforming area where there's a lot of giant Bowser fireballs coming from across the level, you know, from off screen, and you're climbing up. And I remember watching the championships and thinking, you know, for how evil these levels are, I was surprised that there's just a pipe there spitting out free super mushrooms. And in fact, if you get one and then get hit, it'll spit out another one. And today, as I was playing through the level, I realized that that's a trap, because the little area following that is actually easier if you're small Mario. A lot of the jumps are easier because you don't have much overhead room, and you'll bump your head if you're big. And that, again, it's a very simple thing. It's very smart. And it feels like something that Nintendo themselves really wouldn't do. Like, they're not really in the business of punishing you for taking power-ups. They usually, I think, want you to feel that getting power-up is always kind of like a good thing, and it gives you that layer of safety. And all those rules, all the things that are very subtle and you might not think about, but they really factor into what makes Super Mario feel like it does, and what makes it, you know, playable and accessible and fun to play. All that stuff goes out the window, and you can make levels that aren't fun or that are unfair, but you can also make levels that create new kinds of fun, I think, and new kinds of challenges in ways that Nintendo really just has always kind of tied their own hands. And now that's broken apart, and, you know, the community features that I've seen just in the menus, they're not all active in the E3 demo, but you can look at them and you kind of get a sense of what they're going for. To me, it looks very robust. I'm curious what you've seen maybe in the menus or in the interface that kind of makes you excited for what this game could be when we all have it at home.
Yeah, I was looking through it too, and it looks like there's going to be a lot of level sharing, which this game needs to have. We still haven't seen much how the good levels are going to rise to the top. I think there's a favorite system, so if you favorite the level and more people do that, you'll be able to see that those levels are liked and probably download them.
Well, yeah, actually, so you can rate levels that you've downloaded from other people, and there are filters for searching for levels. You can filter by region, you can filter by ranking, you can filter by, I think, whether the person who made it is in your friends list or not. You can filter by who you're following, because if you download a level that you like, you can follow the person who created it and go check out the other levels that they've made. And then also, I noticed that when you finish a level, there's a ticker at the bottom scrolling by and it's suggesting other levels that you may like based on who knows what kinds of attributes from the one that you just did. It tracks a lot of information. So it tracks the feedback that people are getting. You can leave comments on levels for the creator, but also for other people playing it to give them an idea of what it might be like. It'll show you the percentage of how many people have played the level actually cleared it, which might be kind of interesting. And also, there's a great graphical feature that's a little bit like some of the Miiverse stuff that Nintendo's been doing. But when you're playing a level, if you die, a lot of times it'll pop up these little X balloons that show you where other people have died in that same level. And so if you're playing one and it seems really tough, and then you get through you get to a nasty little bit and you die, you might feel bad for not getting through it. But when you see all those X's pop up and you realize that most of the people seem like they're dying at around the same place, that might actually make you feel better, because I think this game is very much going to be about really difficult, or at least just really weird, hard to figure out Super Mario levels. And so maybe that's a way to kind of make people feel a little bit better about not doing so well all the time like they might be used to in these games.
Yeah, and I think another cool feature of the game is you can edit these levels at any time. So if you're having a hard time with like an earlier part of the stage, you could probably edit in like a star or something, or change the level layout just so you can get past it and see the next piece of the level. I mean, I'm sure there's levels where that's going to be harder to do because they're more intricate, but it makes it accessible to players who maybe might not be as skilled as those hardcore players that want the challenge. So it's really for everybody.
So just in wrapping up our little discussion here, Justin, I, in my opinion, from what I've seen so far, this year at E3, Super Mario Maker seems to be exactly what I would want it to be. I really can't think of anything that it's not doing that it seems like it should. If you ask me what a game like this ought to have in it and how it ought to handle that kind of thing. How would I wish Nintendo would make a game where you can make your own Mario levels? This is basically what I would come out with. And it seems to just work really well. And when you're playing the levels, they feel like, it feels like you're playing a Mario game. It's just the levels are crazy. It's, you know, it has that ROM hack kind of feel to it that we've seen YouTube videos of for years and years and years. But now anyone can do it. And also, you know, downloading levels through this is way easier than that, getting that stuff on the PC, and it's all legal too. But there's just going to be so much more of that stuff. And, I'm really, really excited to see what people make, and I'm excited to play that stuff too. It's not, you know, I'm maybe not that much of a level creator myself, but I'm excited to see what other people do. And, I think because it's based on such a solid foundation with Super Mario Brothers and all the different games that are represented in here, I feel like most of the levels people make are going to be at least fun to play, even if they're not that creative. What was your overall feeling on this? I mean, this is the Mario game coming out this year. It's unlike anything we've ever seen from the series before. How do you feel about it as a crazy hardcore fan of the series?
I mean, I love challenging games, and Mario usually delivered some form of challenge, but I think the new Super Mario Brothers series has toned back a little bit overall. It's made it a little easier. They've thrown one-ups at you all over the place. It never felt as punishing. It almost felt like you got unlimited opportunities to beat a level, and then they added that whole super god type thing where it would play itself. So I'm real happy to see that Nintendo is releasing a game that gives me the opportunity to play something more challenging. And it's really exciting, like I said, the new ways you can experience all the different elements. So I'm looking forward to that. And as far as the level creation goes, I don't know if I'm going to be creating as many levels as other people. I'd like to give it a try. It's really hard on the show floor to really sit down and mess around with that due to the limited time. And there's a learning curve to it for sure. So I'm really looking forward to experiment with that a bit and see how it goes. But one thing I am looking forward to is the way James Jones messes around in Smash Brothers. I want to see what kind of crazy crap he starts making in Mario Maker. And this time I'll give it a try. Not in Smash Brothers, but definitely in Super Mario Maker. I'll try it out.
Yeah, totally agreed. Okay, thanks, Justin.
No problem.
Well, let's move on to TYP.
What is it that I actually want to talk about? Can I talk about something non-Nintendo?
Let's talk about something for Nintendo now. Yeah. Right, you can go through your list here.
Yeah, let's see here. Nope, that's non-Nintendo,
Did you play a Nintendo game today?
He's got a whole list of stuff.
Pony Process X-Zone 2, I have nothing to say about it, really. Triforce Hunt Heroes I played a couple of times, mostly yesterday, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, let's talk about The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes.
Yeah, so they had a couple of three-player setups on the show floor, and there was a pretty long line to play these. Overall, it feels very much like, you know, Four Swords Adventures where you're collaborating, but unfortunately the demo setup, it just doesn't really work well in E3 environment. You have to really be able to communicate with your other players to coordinate, like, who's doing what, who's got a slash where. And honestly, it just came off as very disorienting when I was working with random people that over loud noise. And there are a lot of spots where, like, you have to pick up and do this, like, totem pole thing, and it matters who's on the top. And it's very hard to coordinate on who has the right weapon to be able to, right, because you have to have, like, the bow and arrow to hit certain enemies or switches, and someone else might have a bomb. And so if you're not careful, they'll have the wrong person on top, and you can't solve the puzzle. And so I found I ran into that a lot, that kind of clumsy, poorly articulated coordination a lot when I was playing through the demo on both the stages I tried. And the game has these icons that you can tap to try to communicate, but they're very limited. You know, it just says item. Okay, you're telling the other guy to use their item, but maybe they don't know which one you're talking. You know, you don't know who you're talking to. Or, you know, in one case, there was a block puzzle where you had to push the block up, and someone didn't, we were playing with, I guess, didn't realize you had to push A to actually grab a block to be able to push it, right? It's a reasonable thing if you haven't played many Zelda games or it's been a long time. And there wasn't a button you could push to say, hey, push A, right? So, you know, we're walking into it and it's like, why isn't this thing moving? And finally I shouted really loudly to the other people, push A, and then we started moving. And that's the sort of thing that just is super telling, that you gotta have voice communication in this game. There's such a need for collaboration in this game. Like I said, for these puzzles, there's another puzzle where you have to blow up, a block so that, you know, an arrow can go from one side to the other and hit, you know, a torch so it can light up and hit another torch, right? And if you don't communicate, you're dropping bombs, you're going to hurt people, and you have a shared life bar. So every time someone gets knocked off or gets hurt, everyone suffers. And it's cool, it forces you to communicate, but you got to be able to communicate, man, and you just couldn't at E3.
Yeah, I have to say first off, we should say Triforce Heroes is basically three swords, you know.
Yeah, three swords adventures.
Yeah, it's Zelda Four Swords, but with three players. It's exactly that, you know. There's some new stuff, like the ability to pick up another person and to stack on top of each other, and they use that for verticality.
Yeah.
Because this is clearly running in the Link Between Worlds engine, which is kind of built for vertical puzzles. And so, you know, Triforce Heroes, it uses that, but yeah, I would agree. And with a lot of what you said, actually, I would agree. And I had very similar experiences when I was playing the demo. I was, a little shocked and dismayed at the behavior of some of the other people I was playing with.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the people in the Nintendo booth are Nintendo fans to whatever extent. Maybe not as much as us. Some of them definitely more than us. And you just never quite know who you're going to get into. And in that way, it's maybe not ideal for playing a game like this just because you're playing with strangers. At the same time, it may be a very good approximation of what playing online is going to be like. And when I saw, you know, you can pick these costumes in the beginning.
I couldn't figure out what the differences were between them. And I even asked the rabbits, oh, well, you know, one of them will make it so the hearts show up more often. Or I don't know. I picked up something that looked like a bomb armor or something, but I couldn't tell what it was. Maybe it protected me from bombs. I don't know.
Well, there's a little thing on the menu there where you can click for more info on each suit, but it's not really obvious that it's there. So there's a Kokiri costume that makes your bow and arrow shoot out three different directions so that it's more useful for combat, or you can be a little sloppier with puzzle solving that way. The bomb suit, if you get bombs, it makes your bomb bigger and more powerful, which may let you get to different secret areas or just, you know, do certain things more easily. But, you know, like Four Swords, you're picking up one item at a time, whatever's on the little pedestals. And you're even fighting over those with the other people. And I was very dismayed to find out that, you know, one of the other characters chose the bomb outfit and didn't even pick up bombs. Mm. And then the other character had some other outfit and still picked up bombs. So I had the Kokiri outfit with the bonus arrows, and I picked up the arrows, and then I ended up solving all the arrow puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew what I was doing. The other people, they knew how to play Zelda, but they didn't know how to play Four Swords, which is kind of a different skill set.
It is. It requires you to really pay attention to what the other players are doing. And that's very different from, you know, a single player Zelda experience. And I'll be curious to see how this game plays single player. They talked about how you have like dolls or whatever you switch amongst, which isn't that different from how like Four Swords Adventures handle. And I enjoyed playing Four Swords Adventures by myself. It was actually a pretty good experience. So it may be that this game is actually a lot of fun single player, but clearly they're going for multiplayer. And I'm just not convinced it's going to be fun. Just like New Super Mario Brothers isn't fun with four players, right? I kind of got a similar vibe.
I mean, I think both of those games are fun when in multiplayer, but I would say they're also harder with multiplayer.
Oh, absolutely. It's so much easier to communicate with yourself and coordinate with yourself, whereas in, you know, if you're doing Totem, for example, the guy on the bottom has to move around and steer, and the guy on the top has to use his item, right? Yeah. So you have to be able to coordinate to say, okay, I'm turning around now, and then I'm going to shoot that arrow while the enemy's in the right angle, right? And it's very difficult to do that when someone's doing the steering and someone else is doing the shooting, you know, and, it can be a lot of fun, but it's tedious if, again, you can't communicate well. And the buttons and whatever, just, you're not going to be able to time things using these button taps of cheer, 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 or frustration sign, or whatever the hell it is they have on those things. They're actually funny, but they also need voice chat. Nintendo is not going to implement voice chat. And I don't know why they would consider making this game if you cannot do voice chat. I just don't understand.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I certainly think it'll be easier to play, you know, over local wireless than online. But again, I mean, even from our experiences, and we're not the only ones who've had comments like this, even locally, some of these things are hard to coordinate. It's hard to tell people exactly what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Also, you don't necessarily want to just be barking orders at people. You know, I don't, when I get into a group of other people, especially if they're my friends, I don't necessarily want to be the guy saying, okay, you go there. Now you do this. I'm going to do this. You know, I've played enough Zelda that I can usually look at the layout and see more or less what needs to be done. And so puzzle solving might be a bit of a stretch for what's going on in this game. It's more of just coordination and execution of the steps that need to happen is kind of the tough part. But we'll see. We'll see. It certainly is an interesting experiment. It's a somewhat familiar formula, even as a spinoff. They've done a couple of these before. They know what they're doing with it. And I think these games, you know, Zelda multiplayer, we used to be just as skeptical of that as we might be now about Metroid multiplayer, but they've proven that it can work, but under very specific circumstances, and even a game like Four Swords Adventures, which I really liked a whole lot, and I think you did too.
Yeah.
Not many people played it. I was just talking to someone earlier today who said, you know, I was interested in that game, but I didn't think I could get the people together and play it. They didn't even realize that you could do it by yourself. Or that you should, or that it would even be worthwhile to do it, and I think it is. So this is still, Four Swords is still a series that I feel like a lot of Zelda fans have never really tried, and selling it as a standalone thing that most people are probably going to be depending on online play to really get a group together to do it, is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But there is, by the way, download play.
That's good.
For local wireless, so you only need one copy to do that.
That's big.
And that's good, but if you're the only person who bought the game, the other people you're trying to play it with are probably not going to be as familiar with Zelda as you are, so you might end up in kind of some of the situations we've described. So, yeah, I'm definitely in kind of wait-and-see mode, and I'm curious to see how they handle some of the infrastructure and how can you make a game like this really work the way that the designers feel like it should. You know, the people at Nintendo making this are already in sort of the ideal situation to play a game like this where they all know how Zelda works intimately and they're all sitting around each other all the time talking about Zelda and able to play it with each other. And most of us don't have that luxury. So, it's a weird little thing.
I don't want to be too down on it. I actually thought the puzzles in some of the dungeons I played were pretty clever. So again, I think maybe it will be pretty good single player, but if the main purpose is a multiplayer thing, jury's out on how well that's going to work.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Well, I'm going to go bother Jared. Jared, is this an okay time? He sounds apprehensive. Okay. I'll leave Jared alone. He's working on video stuff, which is probably more important. Let's go down here and bug some of these people. For some reason, Neil is taking pictures of someone's computer screen. Hey, Brian.
Hey.
This is Brian Rose. Can you think of a game that you played today, or yesterday, that you found particularly fun, exciting, interesting, that you're enthusiastic about, that you feel like you want to talk about? You can't do Super Mario Maker or Triforce Heroes because we already did those.
Okay. No, the first thing that came to mind was Mario & Luigi Paper Jam. That's, you know, a lot of people weren't that enthused about it, but I am, because I've always been a fan of Paper Mario. I've always been a fan of the Mario and Luigi series. So it's very interesting to see both of them combine and share ideas between one another. It's very unique in the sense that for the first time, Paper Mario is kind of in the Mario and Luigi world, so you kind of have to make sure you know, like, how he jumps and how he... His special ability is to copy. So when he copies... So, like, every time you attack an enemy, like, he jumps, and the more copies you have, the more attacks or more hit points you get. So I found that to be really interesting. And another thing it wasn't very dialogue heavy, but from what I saw, it's very to the heart of what Mario and Luigi is about, like the strong dialogue. So I really like that as well.
Do you feel like it's more of a Mario and Luigi game with Paper Mario as a guest kind of element? I mean, not just the Paper Mario character, but a lot of elements from Paper Mario, but it feels like they've been sucked into a Mario and Luigi world versus the other way around from what I've seen.
From what I can tell, it's like Paper Mario is in Mario and Luigi's world. I mean, there's some elements of Paper Mario that I found in there, but it's mostly Mario and Luigi. Like, when you're on the field, everything is Mario and Luigi kind of gameplay where you have to solve puzzles and you have to use special attacks to, like, the mission I played is where you had to rescue 7 toads, and after you get 4 of them, I believe one of them teaches you a move that where one's running around in a field, and then you have to dash at it and catch it, because it's afraid of Bowser, I believe that's what he said. But it's very much Mario and Luigi with Paper Mario being sucked into its world.
Yeah, I mean, just like in the other Mario and Luigi games, each character is assigned to a certain button to jump over a pit, for instance, or jump up to a ledge. Like in this demo, at least, you're controlling Mario, Luigi, and Paper Mario. And so in order to jump up a ledge, you have to push A and B and Y in sequence. And, or you can even kind of mash them all at the same time, more or less, and you'll probably get it. But if you've played any of the other Mario and Luigi games, you can probably get a feel for how complicated the navigation of these environments might be. And they're three-dimensional environments, which reminded me of Sticker Star, which is a Paper Mario game. But the way, you know, the environments are, have this kind of diorama feel, or you're moving in and out of the background. They're presented in a nice 3D way, and, it feels like it's like a little environment. It's not just a kind of an isometric thing or just a 2D side scrolling type setup, but it really feels like you can explore these areas, and look for lots of little secrets, and the game kind of forces you to, like, some of those toads you were mentioning are really kind of hidden. They're like rolled up and they look like a piece of fence. And I walked right by it several times before I finally found it.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. I had walked past it and I was like, where the hell are they? And then the guy goes, well, did you look at that fence? It looks weird. And I looked at him like, oh, okay. But yeah, I see what you mean by that, because Paper Mario is more of a exploratory thing, I guess. Like Sticker Star, where you had to go and where it's all like a three-dimensional field. Like, I really got that vibe when I was playing it, like, in that sense. But I think at the very core, it's more Mario and Luigi, because you did mention about having to press all 3 buttons to jump, and that was a little difficult for me, but I got the hang of it eventually.
Now, did you try the Papercraft battle?
Yeah, that was pretty wild. Yeah.
It's a bit like a kind of a mech fight, I guess, but it looks like you're controlling a bunch of toads, who are carrying a platform up above their head. It looks like they're all carrying a trampoline around, basically. And then there's a big papercraft cubic looking Mario figure that's much, much, much bigger than they are. And it's sitting on top of that platform, and you're moving it around. I mean, it's still an action setup, basically. It's not like turn-based or anything, and you're moving the character around, and you can use it to dash into enemies, but also, once you stun enemies, you launch the Papercraft Mario off of your platform and try to make it land on the enemy, and then you have to run over with your platform and go pick that thing up. And so it's a weird, I don't know if you ever played or heard of Patapon on the PSP, but it reminded me of that a little bit. There's even like a rhythm game part where you have to recharge your energy. What did you think about all that?
The rhythm-based game is kind of hard because I wasn't able like to hear it when you're out there at E3. But once I figure it, like I think the goal is you have to like press Y, I think, every time you go to the end of the circle and it flashes pink. So that took me a while to get used to, but once I got the hang of it, it was pretty unique. The one thing I enjoyed about it was that, I think it would be the rhythm-based stuff. And once I got used to it, it was pretty fun. And once I figured out what I was doing, it's a unique mode. I'm not sure how it's going to play exactly into the main storyline, but, it has potential. I like to see how they evolve it over time or throughout the course of the game.
Yeah, it seems like maybe you could have different papercraft mechs or whatever we want to call them. But they're, you know, these big characters made of paper. Maybe different characters would have different abilities, and then they would look cool too, because I think the cubic Mario looks really neat. It does look like something someone kind of folded up and made kind of a cardboard 3D thing out of paper. So it might be nice to see what other characters look like and have them play a bit differently. But, that level went on a lot longer than I would have expected. It's not a mini game. It seems like a kind of diversion, sort of.
I didn't think it was that long. I mean, it took me a while to get used to controls, but once I got through the rhythm-based mode, it was pretty easy. I didn't have any big problems with it. It's unique. It's totally unique.
Yeah, I agreed. It's definitely something I haven't seen before in any of those kind of games. So, but yeah, I think Paper Jam looks good. Thanks, Brian.
No problem.
All right, I'm going to keep walking over here and sit between these two guys and start bugging them. Neil. Neil, do you have a game that you played today that really stuck out to you? he might be a little frazzled, because I know Neil played a lot of games today. I did too. It's hard to even remember what all you saw, because they kind of run together, and what you played at the first thing in the morning feels like a week ago at the end of a long day like today.
Well, first, I think I'm going to kind of... I think I know a game that I want to talk about, but first I kind of want to turn this in on you a little bit. Guitar Hero Live, we saw that this morning, and that was kind of awesome. I mean, it's a new Guitar Hero game, and I think that the new controls are very interesting. It's different, but it makes sense, and I kind of like that it's not as focused on moving your fingers up and down. It's more like using your fingers in more interesting ways and not moving it up and down the fretboard. And I also like what they're doing with kind of making it a platform and not focusing on DLC, where with the whole Guitar Hero TV thing, you have all of these songs that then the developer Freestyle Games is going to keep on adding songs, and you'll be able to like tune into like TV channels of sorts that will always be playing music, and you can hop in whenever. And then by doing that, then you level up, you build up plays that then you can use to play songs on demand. And I just think it looks like a very interesting platform, and I'm more interested in it than I thought I would be.
Yeah, me too. I love Guitar Hero. I've played a whole lot of Guitar Hero over the years, and Rock Band. Rock Band 4 is not coming to Wii U this year, or probably never. And part of the reason that I think Harmonix gave was that there wasn't a good way for them to bring over the DLC songs from the Wii version to the Wii U version, because Nintendo doesn't have an account system to keep track of what you've paid for in the past. Nintendo doesn't really know what songs you downloaded on the Wii. I can't blame them for that. I mean, obviously the appeal of Rock Band 4 is very much you can play all your old songs, but on the new system. And so you can put away your old consoles and your old copies of the game. And that doesn't work for Wii U. So it makes sense that that's not coming out. And, you know, Guitar Hero Live is coming to the Wii U. And I was telling the developers today, the more I thought about it, the more I learned about their Guitar Hero TV mode, which is the one you described, where it's like songs are streaming. They're just playing. They're not going to wait for you to start. You jump into it. You jump out of it. You can't fail it. You're playing it for fun. They keep leaderboards for everything, and you can't necessarily just choose the songs you want whenever, unless you spend kind of an in-game currency, which, by the way, you can probably spend real money to get more of those, but you don't have to. You can also just earn them from playing the game. That approach, I would agree, seems, I like it a lot. It's innovative. I've never seen anything really quite like it. And it takes a lot of explanation to really kind of get a feel for why it might be good and how it might actually be very friendly to the consumer. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, this actually works really well for Wii U, because you don't need a deep catalog of paid DLC in order to enjoy a lot of different songs in this mode. You don't have to worry about whether your purchases are going to be future-proofed and compatible with future editions of the game, because you're not purchasing these songs. You don't own them. They're just made available to you for a limited time, or maybe some of them for much longer through the on-demand feature. They also described an interesting kind of party mode or karaoke mode, almost, is what I would describe it, where you can spend a little bit of real money and just get an unlimited pass to play as many on-demand songs as you want for, you know, a set amount of time, maybe for a few hours. And they said, you know, that's for if you're having a party and you have people who come over, they want to play whatever song they want, and they don't want to have to worry about what's currently available on the stream and what's not. You can just spend, you know, a few bucks and just open up everything for a few hours. Everybody can play whatever they want. It's an interesting idea, and that's all in addition to the crazy FMV first person stagecraft type stuff that they focused on in the original announcement. So those are kind of like the two sides of the game. So yeah, I mean, for all those reasons, the way that they're handling this stuff, and you know, I think they have little intention of doing another Guitar Hero next year. That's kind of the ending.
I was talking to one of the guys at Freestyle and kind of said that. I was like, they're pimping this one. It's not like they're going to talk about the sequel necessarily, but it did seem from talking to them that they are focused very much on making this a platform. And you know what? We're probably going to see a Guitar Hero Live 2. Like, if this is successful, like, that'll happen because it's another box copy that Activision can sell. But it seems like, as it is right now, like, this might be a platform that sticks around for a while. And that's exciting. I'm glad to see companies kind of go in that direction. And, I mean, another game that's kind of doing the Lego Dimensions in response, I mean, not necessarily in response to Skylanders and Disney Infinity, which do have yearly annual releases. Lego Dimensions, in theory, is going to be one version of the game, and it's just going to have expansions coming. And that's something that I was kind of hoping would happen with some of those other Toys to Life things, and that didn't really happen.
At least not yet.
Yeah,
so I'll speak a little bit about actually playing Guitar Hero, because certainly the modes and the menu interface and the way that you access songs and the presentation of it all is so different from anything that series has ever seen before. And honestly, it takes a while to kind of wrap your head around it. It's really not only not like other Guitar Hero games, not really like any game I've ever seen, the way they're presenting all that. But in terms of playing it, you know, you referred to it earlier, the new controller with the 6 buttons, 3 on top, 3 on bottom, black and white. It is very much more focused on moving your fingers up and down, rather than sliding your hand, your hand along the fretboard along the length of it.
And works really well for me because I broke my pinky in half when I was in high school. So whenever I play Guitar Hero, I would be playing with 3 fingers. Like, I can't really move it. Like, I know that if playing, you know, Rock Band and Guitar Hero back in the day, the way to properly do it is you're using all 4 fingers. For me, I would always have to use 3 darting across all 5. So this kind of works out better for me because I don't need to use my pinky at all. And my pinky's kind of useless for fine motor stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, I think this isn't necessarily easier than the Rock Band style or the old Guitar Hero style of five buttons in a row. In fact, you know, some of the chord shapes that or the pseudo chord shapes that you can make where, you know, you have one finger on the bottom row and the other finger up on a higher row, or you're holding down both buttons, and then maybe using another finger to kind of tap on and off every other note farther down. There's some pretty complicated patterns that they can make out of these six buttons. So it, in some ways it's more difficult, and certainly it's a new skill that you kind of have to learn from scratch, and there's a learning curve there. But in another way, it does take away one of the things that really did seem to cause people a lot of problems in learning how to play the older or the other style of guitar games, which is sliding your hand up and down. It's a barrier that a lot of people never really quite get used to or never really quite figure out how to do it comfortably. They've basically taken that away now. You can leave your hand in the same place all the time. It's more about you have to have a little bit more fine motor skill over your fingers, but not your whole hand.
Yep.
And the math or the shape recognition, the pattern recognition that you're translating from what you see on screen through your brain to what your fingers are doing is different. It's not necessarily easier or harder. It's different. It can be just as easy as the old way. It can be just as hard as the old way, maybe even harder. And it can span that whole gamut. And we saw a lot of different examples of that in different kinds of songs. So, I have a lot more thoughts about Guitar Hero. Honestly, it was one of the most interesting E3 demos I can recall.
Yeah.
And with lots and lots of surprises. And I came away from it thinking, man, I think I still want to play stuff like this. It's been a while.
I'm very excited for that in Rock Band this year. It was kind of funny because I remember the rumblings of Rock Band and Guitar Hero earlier this year, and I was like, it's been kind of a long time. I could go for that again. And then now we're here.
Yep. I mean, just playing even a little taste of it today in the demo, it totally got me jonesing for more of that stuff. Yep. And Guitar Hero is, it's going to have a two-player battle mode, but it's primarily focused as a single-player mode. And there's no drums, there's no singing, there's no bass.
And there's no plans for that in the future.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I think it sets them apart from Rock Band, and they no longer seem like redundant or even directly competitive products. It feels like Guitar Hero is kind of doing its own thing. And I have to say, I think you might have been there too, Neil, having sat through the Guitar Hero 6 Warriors of Rock demo a few years ago at E3, this feels that was so forced and kind of like faux hardcore.
Yeah.
And it seemed a little desperate in like finding ways to mix it up and make it feel cool. Yeah. And it was it was all about score attacks. And he was like, you can get your multiplier up to 200 or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, okay, but what that doesn't mean, it's all relative. I mean, that doesn't really mean anything if everyone else is doing the same thing.
Warriors of Rock is the Tony Hawk problem. It was like, once you can do the 900 in Tony Hawk, like, well, what do you do next? Oh, I guess you make it Jackass. Like, I mean, that's what happened to Guitar Hero, and now we're actually seeing Tony Hawk also in the same way come back, except for apparently you can shoot things in it, but I see that tomorrow.
That seems like a bad idea, but well, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
Guitar Hero, I came away from it feeling extremely positive in a way that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I was curious about it, but also had a lot of reservations about it. And yeah, from everything I saw and heard and played for myself, I thought I'm definitely buying this year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm totally down for it. And I'm going to buy Rock Band 4 as well.
Yeah.
But this time I know that I'm going to be getting really different experiences out of those two things. And that's fine. I'm very happy with.
I want to see them play to their strengths, and it looks like that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I might even buy those two games on two different platforms. I might buy the Wii U version of Guitar Hero because why not? I don't think you'll be losing anything from doing that. And I don't have to worry about the guitars being compatible with each other or anything like that, because that's no longer part of the equation either. It was a surprising demo and a very positive one for me. And sounds like for you too.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I didn't kind of expect the Guitar Hero Live conversation to go on that long. So I guess maybe we'll save talking about Chibi-Robo Ziplash for tomorrow after we interview the producer of the game, Risa Tabata from Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure we'll learn a few little tidbits from that, and probably end up playing a little bit more of it as well. Mm-hmm. But I like that game so far. I have some questions for her for sure. Yes. There's some interesting choices in the demo, but overall, Chibi Robo looks very promising, and I'm excited to be playing Chibi Robo again.
Yeah.
I'm excited that that character is still alive and they're still doing cool things with him.
Character in a cute world.
Wait until you see the baby Chibi Robos, or wait until you see Toby, the absolutely adorable, like, plushy airplane.
Yeah. I've seen all of these things. Or the fact that you collect Utz potato chips and Utz pretzel wheels and Mentos. It's just like all, it's, I mean, like, it seems like the story is just like, I don't know, you're, land on a foreign planet that's probably Earth or some shit. I don't even know. But I don't think it matters, because all it is just Chibi Robo with a tail whip, and you're collecting things, and there's insanity.
Yep. More to come on Chibi Robo. Yeah. Ziplash. Okay. Well, I'm going to end this little tour of the NWR bungalow with Mr. John Raritan, who's over here with a very loud laptop encoding video, as he's been doing all day long. And, John, what did you see today that really got you excited and that other people haven't already talked about? I'll stop you if I need to.
Well, the easy answer would be Star Fox, but instead let's talk about something that's gotten way too much hate, which is, Metroid Prime Blaster Ball.
Good man.
So I played it at, we had a Nintendo booth tour, and so I played it there for the first time. And I thought it was a lot of fun. One thing that I think a lot of people have been missing out on, and I think this is mainly the fault of the models that Nintendo hires to run these kiosks on the actual floor, is that that game is in fact an actual dual stick shooter. You can, if you hold down the right trigger, you're able to look up and down. And according to them, you're also able to, in the options menu, set it up to use a C-stick on the new 3DS.
Yeah, I played with a C-stick, and that was fine.
Yeah, so it's a... And once you know that, it adds a ton of depth to that game. Because initially, you just think, you know, shoot the ball, it goes to the other side, the end. But once you know that you can aim up and down, now you can pop the ball over people's heads, you can drop it down on people, which does a ton of damage to them, and it becomes a much more intricate game than you'd initially think.
So you would recommend not relying on the auto, on the lock-on feature all the time. The way, cause when I first played it, the rep actually told me, yeah, you should lock on the ball and you could just leave it on. You can just stay locked on the whole time.
Neil looks like he really wants to say something.
Okay.
I mean, what I noticed with it is, cause I played a bunch of rounds with it, and I'm with John on this, and that I think there's more there than kind of meets the eye at first. And the strategy that I found to be most effective is you are always locking on the ball, and that's because it's the best way to focus on it. But then you can use the gyro aiming while locked on, like almost kind of like how Metroid Prime 3 worked with the pointer. So I would be locking on and shooting at it, and if I wanted to try to pop it over someone's head, then I would use the gyro aiming and kind of aim at a specific part or try to lead it a little bit by moving the gyro. And I think that you do always want to stay locked on, but you also want to be mindful of using those gyro controls.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, even just locking on all the time, I think, detracts from the other element of that game, which is that you can kill the other players, which makes it a lot easier to get the ball past them because they are dead. So.
That's so a lot of-
Yeah, and it's delightful to see the robot fall to the ground and their tiny little chibi body fly out and they look all sad and disappointed. It's great fun. So yeah, I mean, there's not a ton to say about that game, but I just know that people, because it has a different vibe and style than the other Metroid Prime games, people have been giving it a lot of crap. But guess what? It's a fun game. And all the games you love came from someone innovating something new. So. Give it a chance. It's fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, I guess especially with Blast Ball, I feel like my concern is that it just, it has really nothing whatsoever to do with Metroid, and so I would prefer maybe that they just didn't call it that, because there's really no element of Metroid Prime. There's, when you're doing this competitive thing in Blast Ball, there's really no element of it, whereas, you know, a mode that also got a lot of hate that I actually kind of enjoyed was the multiplayer in Metroid Prime 2 Echoes. And by comparison, that mode was much more Metroid than Blast Ball. You're running around getting upgrades. You can morph ball. You're using all the weapons from Metroid Prime 2. You're collecting power-ups. It's very much about who's the most powerful, who's collected the most abilities. They're going to be the most effective in combat. And you're racing around these complicated 3D environments. To me, the concern with Blast Ball is, at least what we've seen, the demo is very simple. The arena is just an oval with nothing in it. It's a caged oval basically with goals on either side. And you've got six people running around shooting at this ball. There's no other features. I didn't see much point in jumping, really. Maybe to avoid the ball every now and then, but most of the time, you really shouldn't have to be doing that. It's mostly just lock on, run around, shoot the ball, try not to get rolled over by it. Am I missing something, or do you think that's enough for a mode like this to be, you know, substantive and worth showing on its own, even when the main piece of this game of Federation Force isn't here at E3 at all? Like, we're not allowed to play the rest of it, so this is all we have to go on is Blast Ball. I don't know if this is the best foot forward that Nintendo could have done with this new game that's very surprising, very different from what people might expect from a Metroid game, and what we're doing here on the floor of this thing called, you know, the stand says Metroid Prime Blast Ball, and there's no Metroid to it. It's not really Metroid. It's a fun game, I would agree. It's just not Metroid. That's kind of my main criticism of it, I guess. But I did enjoy playing it. And, you know, it sounds like you did too. What have you seen from the campaign, from the cooperative stuff, that makes you feel like, you know, this game deserves our patience and consideration and, you know, and a more open attitude?
Well, I mean, first of all, never judge a game by its art style. You'll miss out on so many good games if you only play games that look realistic and don't have characters with big cartoonish heads. But secondly, I mean, it's an online tactical squad-based shooter. That sounds fun. And I mean, I think Metroid is a universe that's full of lore that could totally be explored and expanded on in spin-off games. The whole time I was playing through Metroid Prime 3, I was thinking, man, it would be cool to just have like a straight-up first-person shooter where you're playing as these Marines. Like, because they're such cool-looking characters. And so, I mean, I think this is kind of, I mean, it doesn't quite look like what I wanted, but it's that concept of, you know, having this just pretty much a shooter that you can get online with and play with other people, and seems somewhat tactical, is something that is really fresh and new from Nintendo. And yes, it's a different take on the Metroid universe, but I don't think it's a bad take. I do think it was a mistake to have the only thing present and playable at E3 be Blast Ball. But it's also, I think that is one small mode in a grander game. I wouldn't at all be surprised to find out that this game also has, you know, a team deathmatch mode on it. I think Blast Ball happens to be an interesting multiplayer mode that they're far enough along with that it's easy for them to demo. Yeah,
that could be. I agree with pretty much everything you said, and I like your positive attitude, especially at nearly 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, so, yeah.
So, all right. Well, we're gonna wrap up this episode. I'm starting to lose my voice, actually, we've got one more day of E3. We've got more games to play, a lot more to talk about here coming up on even more episodes of Radio Free Nintendo and connectivity here pretty soon after E3, and the Famicast. You're going to hear lots of reactions from those guys, even though they're not here at the show, sadly. Anyway, we hope you will continue following us on NintendoWorldReport.com, NWRTV on YouTube, and, of course, our Twitter accounts, Nintendo_NWR. That's a good place, right? And at RFN Podcast. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.